Okay, let's get it. It is Locked On LSU, your team every day. I'm Matt Moscona. Glad to have you aboard with us. Of course, you can catch me every weekday afternoon, ESPN Radio in Baton Rouge, New Orleans, Alexandria, Cox Sports TV, and right here for the Locked On LSU podcast. We will let you hear what Ryan Clark had to say coming out of the LSU-Texas game, talking a little about this weekend as well. Also, I'll get you a prediction for LSU and Northwestern State. Not so much a winner because a foregone conclusion at this point, but what I'd like to see and what I think will play out on Saturday in Death Valley. I want to start, though, with a little bit of news from Ed Orgeron as he met with the media on Thursday night, including news about suspended wide receiver Dee Anderson, who will not play for the Tigers this year.
Dee Anderson is suspended from the football team for the year.
Succinct and to the point, and certainly unfortunate. Look, Dee Anderson is physically one of the guys that when you see him in the uniform, he's the all-airport team, as some say. When he gets off the bus, that's the guy you want getting off the bus first. You know, 6'5", 200 pounds, and that 200 pounds might be even a little understated for how physically imposing a guy like Dee Anderson is out on the field and in that receiver group. But as it is now, it looks like Dee Anderson's career at LSU is going to go down as maybe one of the more disappointing careers among the wide receivers, considering how physically gifted he is. And then as a freshman in 2016, caught just four balls for 73 yards. That was that was obviously the year where Les Miles was fired and they transitioned midway through the year to Ed Orgeron with Steve Ensminger calling plays. You know, then 2017 was a disappointing year for LSU all the way around. Anderson had just three catches for 45 yards. And then last year in his junior season, you know, Dee Anderson had 20 catches for 274 and maybe anticipated a bit more than that. But a lot of Dee's shortcomings have been his own fault, as you're seeing right now, his inability to take care of things on and off the field, academically and, you know, within compliance, that have kept him away and prevented him from being productive. He has one career touchdown, and you might remember it was last year in the seven overtime game against Texas A&M, where he scored that touchdown in overtime of that ball game. So, you know, if that ends up being his only touchdown, certainly it was a significant one, albeit in a loss, but in one of the more memorable games in the history of LSU football. But it's also worth noting, you know, when you think about how this has progressed over the last month or so, to Ed Orgeron on Thursday saying Dee Anderson is suspended for the season. Remember, this is what Ed Orgeron said when LSU reported for fall camp, and he first announced Dee Anderson's suspension.
Yeah, Dee Anderson is currently suspended from all team activities. He has some conditioning stuff to get done, and when he gets that conditioning stuff done, we feel like he's going to be back. I think he's going to come home. I think it's just a conditioning deal, and I think that he's going to be fine once he gets in the right condition that he needs to. I think he'll be fine.
As candid as Ed Orgeron usually is, even there, obviously he wasn't fully forthcoming with the degree to which Dee Anderson had run afoul. The good news for LSU, you've got three receivers that at any given day, in any given game for LSU, could be a 100-yard receiver, or all three of them like they were against Texas with Jefferson, Chase, and Marshall. And then beyond that, we know how it goes. You're still trying to figure out a way to get Stephon Sullivan involved. You've got guys like Derek Dillon and then Trey Palmer and Jeray Jenkins, and the list goes on and on. So LSU not short for athletes, but that's one of the more disappointing ones because of how physically imposing Dee Anderson is and how what potential he has as a 6'5", 6'6", wide receiver. That's a giant matchup problem, but just hasn't been able to figure it out during his time in Baton Rouge. So outside of Dee Anderson, few questions about the defensive line. Ed Orgeron deemed Kalavon Chasson questionable, while both defensive lineman Glenn Logan and Rashard Lawrence will not play this weekend against Northwestern State. However, good news for freshman nose tackle Apuaika, who did not play at Texas, but things are looking good for this week.
Yeah, he's trying. We still got a ways to go. He's got to lose some weight. He's got to get in better shape. He's a great young man. I think he's going to be a great player. He'll play this week, though.
But this really is a great opportunity this weekend for backups like Neil Farrell, for Justin Thomas, for some younger players like Jarrell Cherry, who redshirted a season ago, for Joseph Evans, who's a true freshman from Hainesville, who played in the opener and is one of those guys you're going to have to decide, okay, over these next three games, is he advancing to a level where you want to continue using him and burn a year of eligibility, or is he a redshirt candidate? That's something that you'll find out in a game like this and as you move through these next 3 weeks. So that's maybe the – I would say with the outcome very likely not in doubt in this ball game, with Northwestern State having a tough year, the most interesting thing to watch outside of Joe Burrow continuing to pace his stats so we can talk about, you know, Heisman contention, is the defensive line rotation with two key contributors out, your two starters out on the defensive line. Who gets those reps? Who emerges? Who establishes themselves for rotational purposes? And then also to see if any of these freshmen who might have been a redshirt candidate do in fact play this season. So a couple of things to keep an eye on as LSU takes the field against Northwestern State on Saturday night in Tiger Stadium. Okay, it's Locked On LSU, your team every day. Quick break, come back. Former LSU Tiger and ESPN football analyst Ryan Clark talks Tigers next. Locked On LSU, your team every day. We continue Locked On LSU, your team every day. Glad you're hanging out with us here. I have the great fortune every week on After Further Review, my daily radio show, to visit with Ryan Clark, who not only played more than a decade in the NFL, won a Super Bowl, played at LSU, was a captain at LSU, led the SEC in tackles 1 year, and now works as an analyst on ESPN, just knows a tremendous amount about the game. I have a chance to visit with Ryan on my show for about half an hour, and not focus so much NFL like he does for ESPN, but to talk specifically about LSU, which he's very passionate about and knows so much about the roster. And so we knocked around a bunch, and in part what I want you to hear in this part of, and again, you can go hear that full half an hour with Ryan Clark online, 1045ESPN.com. Click On Demand After Further Review. You'll see the Ryan Clark conversation there from hour one on Thursday, September the 12th. But I asked Ryan Clark something we've debated a lot this week, which is, can you be elite defensively while running the spread offense,
To be elite? I mean, it just depends on how you look at elite. I think if
So last year, Clemson was third in the country in scoring, fifth in the country in total defense, but they also play in the ACC.
Yeah, and so Clemson was going to be the team I pointed to for this reason, for no other reason other than the championship. And Tua was on one leg for sure, but if you watch that game, they dominated defensively. They also had five defensive linemen who are pros now, and that always helps. When you look at Alabama last year, they weren't as strong in other years as we've seen them, but they've probably been a spread team the last 3 or 4 years. They've been explosive offensively, and they've still been good defensively. And I think sometimes it's not necessarily the numbers, right? It's not where you rank statistically. It's the ability you have to win football games and win them in convincing fashion. If I score 45 and I give up 17, even though that 17 might not be what I'm used to giving up when I was the old Alabama or the old LSU, that's a good game, because now you know teams are changing the way they attack you because they're behind. So you're going to give up yards. You're going to give up points. I think Clemson, to me, from an offensive and defensive complementary standpoint, in the spread offenses has kind of been the gold standard the last couple of years. I think Alabama right behind them. Alabama's talent level is different than we've been used to seeing, though. I don't think they have the elite corners. Diggs gets a little banged up last week. I'm not sure where he is now. Patrick Surtain Jr., still young but very talented. The safety group isn't necessarily the Minka Fitzpatricks of the world. And so I think
just secondary at Bama or the whole defense?
The whole defense, right? Because this is the first year, and they're good, but Dylan Moses was going to be their best defensive player. Yeah. He's the guy who's injured. They start two true freshmen at linebacker, one of which is right there from University Laboratory School, Christian Harris, who's playing extremely well. And there's also, this isn't the year that there was a guy. Every time you talk to scouts or you talk to anyone that goes into Alabama around draft time, there's always two or three defensive linemen, as we're watching the Quinnen Williams and the Paynes and all these guys leave, there's always a dude behind them that they go, hey,
watch out
they were good, but this dude's better. And every year, you're like, man, shut up. Like, y'all just say that junk just because y'all think it's cool to be like, oh, this dude's really good. And then you see Quinnen Williams, and he's like, on the outside in his helmet, he's like this super grown man. And then he takes his helmet off, and he's like a chubby kid with braces. It's a weird thing.
Right?
You know, and then he smiles and laughs all the time, and he belly-to-back suplexes your quarterback. You know, so they always have those type of dudes. And this year, I think it's a little different. No. Everybody there is a 4 or 5 star for sure. But I just think the dominance of this defense is different. They obviously haven't been tested this year with the two offenses they've played, but they're going to be really good still. And so I just think going into that game, we have to understand that when it's Jalen Waddle and Jerry Jeudy and Ruggs Jr. and Devontae Smith, like those four dudes probably all will go in first two rounds.
Yeah.
Now, our guys too, right? Like Jamar Chase, stud. Terrace Marshall, stud. Justin Jefferson, probably the best one of the three and wasn't even as highly recruited, at least the most important for us. And even with those guys, Jerry Jeudy comes to school here, he starts.
Yeah.
Henry Ruggs comes to school here, he probably starts too. You know what I mean? And so they're the one crew that I think matches up with ours, and unfortunately they don't play in like the Pac-12.
And one more thought here from RC. Of course, we saw Christian Fulton get banged up a little bit in the game against Texas. Cordell Flott went in. They immediately went after him, 28-yard completion. So I asked Ryan, in light of that, cornerback depth after Fulton and Stingley, it's got to be a problem, right?
Not really, because if you look at that play, he had good coverage on it. It was a back shoulder underthrown ball. Bigger guy comes back and catches the ball. If that's necessarily a problem, then it's a problem at 111 Division I schools. And so I would be more concerned if he just wasn't around, if he was a guy that was just beaten badly and looked like he couldn't play. Because if you're going to say that Cordell Flott was a problem, then a guy who's going to be a pro next year, Christian Fulton, is a bigger problem. And I think he can really play. Mm-hmm. Christian Fulton is going to be an early round pick, but he didn't have the best day. And so you can't just look at Cordell's one play and say that he's a problem. And then you look at later on in the game, there's a play on the sideline. He comes up, he finished off the play physical. So he didn't look like he didn't belong out there, or the moment was too big. A bigger, more veteran guy went up and got a football. And what's going to happen is, as it's going to be at this school, they're going to be, in the next 2 or 3 years, some very good football players be recruited to play the cornerback position. They are all going to be compared to one other player on that team, which we shouldn't do. And we shouldn't compare other freshmen, other DBs to Derek Stingley Jr. Right? Like there's – what happens is, man, some of us are born here, and then there are some of us whose planet becomes under siege. It catches on fire, and their parents put us in this little pod – and they send us down to earth, and then we wake up and we grow up on a farm with like some beautiful actress who used to be young, but now she's older, and then some older actress who was once an action star, and now he plays our dad, and we grow up on this ranch, and then we become a fake writer, a photographer for like this newspaper, and then we meet this woman named Lois Lane, and then we wear these tights and this crazy suit, and we put on this cape, and we save the world. Right? That's Derek Stingley.
That sounded more like Superman than it did Derek Stingley.
Well, the same thing.
Oh, okay.
That was my point. And so in that, we can't compare everybody to him. And yeah, they threw two balls on him. They didn't catch him. We're going to see that a lot. But I think the little bit I saw from Cordell Flott, he didn't feel like he didn't belong. He didn't seem like it was too big for him. I think, you know, there's more worry with Christian and the way he played the ball down the field. We talked a little bit about it. He kind of understood what was going on. He was banged up, so he couldn't get in and out of breaks with the lower extremity ankle injury. And so he'll be better going forward. I think he has to get back into it. He missed a lot of camp with a hamstring tightness. And so we'll be better in the secondary. I do think the speed of the game kind of catches you as well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and what happens is if you look at the play that Christian gave up the touchdown, they rushed to the line, right? Grant Delpit actually comes out of the middle of the field and takes the number 2 receiver just because nobody's on him. And so when you have kind of that helter-skelter movement, when the ball goes up in the air, you have to learn to slow your breathing down, take all the rest of those things that are outside interferences out of the way and make a play on the ball. And he didn't do that. He understands that. And so going forward, he has to be better. Todd Harris has to be better at playing the ball. And I think that's a huge reason why Kerry Vincent Jr. is the guy that plays the safety in our nickel situations. Because as you see, go back to Justin Jefferson's touchdown later in the game on third down. What happened is Caden Stearns, who's a very good safety, ended up in the matchup on Justin Jefferson. Whereas the way we play it, we move Grant Delpit down and allow Kerry Vincent to be that guy matching up. So you have good on good from a cover standpoint. And so I think we'll get better from that standpoint. I don't necessarily know that we're tested like that, even though I'm not a big, huge fan of these wide receivers from Texas, that we're tested like that until we get to Alabama. So we have that time to progress. You have that time to gain confidence. And I believe we'll score enough in all the games to that point to where it won't even matter anyway.
Great conversation, as always, with Ryan Clark. Again, if you want to hear the entire conversation, get over to 1045ESPN.com. On demand, click after further review. Again, you just heard a couple of 3 or 4 minute snippets. We had a full half an hour conversation, so if you want to hear the whole thing, get on demand at 1045ESPN.com. This is Locked On LSU, your team every day, brought to you in part by Vivid Seats. Make a memory that lasts a lifetime, and let the Vivid Seats app help you get to your favorite live event. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. Download the Vivid Seats app. Enter the promo code KICKOFF at checkout to receive a discount of up to $100. It is Locked On LSU, your team every day. Final break. We'll come back, give you a pick. LSU Northwestern State. Stick around. Wrapping up another edition of the Locked On LSU podcast, your team every day. If you've not done so yet, please like the podcast, subscribe to it. However you listen to podcasts, if you could subscribe, that would just be massively helpful. So thank you for all that have continued to listen and tell everyone about it and help us grow. As I mentioned last week, we spent the entire week in the iTunes top 200, which is massive growth, and we're thrilled for it. So thank you. Normally on Friday here, I give you a pick in this last segment. For LSU's game, they're a 51-point favorite over Northwestern State. So let's get real. I think the biggest question is, does Burrow get his numbers? And what about the freshman running backs? First of all, here was Ed Ogeron talking about Burrow and Heisman contention.
I'm happy for him. I think he should win it. That's me. He's my favorite quarterback. I can tell you that.
So a lot of people have wondered, you know, can you maintain Heisman contention when you play a game like this? And you know, you may not play into the second half. Well, I'll remind you that in the opener, Burrow threw for 278 and 5 touchdowns all in a half. So that in and of itself gives you an example. You could look just a year ago with Kyler Murray and Tua. Both had games similar. For Tua, you know, they played – here was their – we forget how dominant this offense was. This is what Alabama scored per game, starting with the season opener against Louisville. 51, 57, 62, 45, 56, 65, 39, 58, and then the 29-0 win over LSU. ULL, he was 8 of 8 for 128 and 2 scores. Against Ole Miss, he was 11 of 15 for 191 and 2 scores. He didn't go over 20 attempts until Game 4 when they played Texas A&M. So, yeah, you can still very much be in Heisman contention and have those games that are blowouts where the starting quarterback is out by half but eats a little bit. Kyler Murray, for example, in the season opener last year, his Heisman year against Florida Atlantic, he was 9 of 11 for 209 and 2 scores. There were just those days. The Army day, he was 11 of 15 for 165, 3 touchdowns and a pick. Everybody has their off days. The question is, can you cumulatively over the season have what you need to have for a collective statistical year that looks like a Heisman season, and then have big moments in big games, which Lord knows Joe Burrow will have plenty of those opportunities here over the next 6 weeks or so. So I'm interested to see Burrow get his stats, which I believe he will. I'm maybe even more interested to see how the running backs are used. Here was Ed Ogeron on Thursday talking about how he plans to use the freshman running backs.
I hope to play them a bunch. Really a bunch. We're going to start off with our first team, but I was just thinking about that now. I'm looking forward to those guys running the football.
So since we know the game won't really be very competitive, if you want a prediction, I would give you that I think both John Emery and Ty Davis-Price have double-digit carries in this ball game. It's going to get out of hand. LSU's going to salt it away in the second half, and in large part they'll do that by running these freshmen, because if you're Ed Orgeron right now, you use this next month to figure out, of these running backs, who can be valuable to your offense after Clyde Edwards-Helaire, and then the role that Leonard Fournette is going to play, whatever that is. If Ty Davis-Price and or John Emery can emerge over this next month, we saw this similarly with Kenny Hilliard in 2011, his freshman year, where late in that season, he kind of became one of the bell cows that you leaned on. So we'll see if maybe one of these guys can do that, but that starts this weekend. I think both Ty Davis-Price and John Emery have double-digit attempts. Will they score? It feels like a lot of guys are going to score in this ball game, but if you get into a goal line situation, who gets the ball, I don't know. But I do think you will see them get Stephon Sullivan his first catch of the season, and I do think you will see double-digit attempts for both John Emery and Ty Davis-Price in this ball game on Saturday. LSU's going to win big. I do think they will hit 60 points for the first time this season, not because they're running it up or it's intentional. I just think that Northwestern State is a supremely overmatched team. And with the style of offense LSU is playing, it's going to be nearly impossible for Northwestern State to get a stop. So I think you're going to see LSU stuff the offensive stat sheet, score over 60. And again, I think both Ty Davis-Price and John Emery, double-digit attempts rushing the football for the game for LSU. All right, enjoy the weekend of football. Not a great college football slate, admittedly, but the Tigers are back on the field, and we will be back here on Monday recapping LSU and Northwestern State. Until then, have a great weekend. It's Locked On LSU, your team every day.